Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Sarah Baker, Lila Harrod, and Jeff Garmeyer, who all set self-supported fastest known times on the Appalachian Trail this summer. Sarah set the women's northbound record in 74 days, 4 hours, and 42 minutes. Lila set the women's southbound record in a time of 52 days, 18 hours, and 37 minutes. And Jeff set the men's southbound record in 45 days, 8 hours, and 37 minutes. So thank you guys so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
First things first, this is a really long FKT. It involves a lot of commitment. And so I would just like to know your why. Why did you decide you guys wanted to do the self-supported AT record? Sarah, why don't you start?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So for me, after my through hike, I really had kind of wanted to explore possibly doing a supported record. And I did attempt that last year and I failed. After 5 days, I decided to go home. And so I really realized that I wasn't ready for that. And I needed to work on myself. And I really believed that pursuing the record in a self-supported style could help me become a stronger person mentally. And that is my why.
Jeff, how about you?
Yeah, I did the AT in 2016 as part of the calendar year Triple Crown. And I guess it just kind of introduced how this trail, unlike any other, has so much history. And I guess just people love it. And it's really challenging too. I think I just saw like the combination of those two and it kind of stuck in my mind. And I did a number of FKTs and stuff, but then it always came back to like, this record is so difficult, so consuming. So many people have done it. And I would love to go after something that I don't even know if I can get. And that's kind of where I've thrived and enjoyed growing as a person over the past couple decades, is when there is that big unknown, how do you do, especially in the midst of it when things go wrong? Is it like, did that just ruin my chances of getting this FKT or not? And it's in those micro moments that I think I just really have fallen in love with the personal growth of when you don't know the answer to things, what are you going to do as a person? And something so long as the AT gives you a lot of those moments. So I think that was a big why. And, you know, this one question could make up probably an entire book for all of us. So I'll leave it at that for now. But that is a big reason I like putting myself in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, the why is always a very complex question. So Cliff Notes version is fine.
Yeah.
Lila, how
about
you? I agree
with Jeff. I have so many different reasons for doing it, but I had actually thru-hiked the AT. That was my first thru-hike in 2021. Same year that Gazelle did it too. And I had loved it. It sort of like was my entryway into this whole world, this whole community, this whole lifestyle. And I'd fallen in love with it. And over the next few years, hiking all around the country, doing a lot of more like solo and backcountry hikes where I was sort of really by myself or in the desert backcountry. I found myself last year on the Divide to Crest route, which is the 3,000 mile route that I created from the southern terminus of the CDT to the northern terminus of the PCT. I was spending so much time by myself and I was really looking back on my time on the AT and the community and the connection and the home that I've built there over the past few years. And just wanting to get back to that and wanting to like immerse myself in that and immerse myself in, you know, that green tunnel and the warm hug that is the AT community. And yeah, I mean, it's also like, you know, it's also a part of it to say that I was interested in providing some trans representation at a time where it's severely lacking. And yeah, it was a way that I could be competitive and be authentic and true to myself in a way that's public and that can stand up for other trans people who might not get to see that every day right now.
And I mean, each of you touched on the fact that you've hiked the AT before. So you've all had previous AT experiences through hike. Jeff, yours was a little different because it was also in the context of like a big effort. But could you talk a little bit about you know, maybe the similarities and the differences between your previous AT experience and the FKT. Jeff, you want to start?
I think it was maybe a lot more time management and stress on going for an FKT. Even the calendar year Triple Crown, you have to be pretty efficient, but this was like down to how many minutes am I going to be spending in a resupply? And so just that mindset of like a town stop or resupplies or all that, those were like the most stressful parts of the trip because it's like I'm not moving, I should be moving, versus when I'm back on the trail, it was more peaceful for the most part and enjoying it. So it kind of flipped the script of like, everyone's always excited to get to town and get ice cream or a burger or a shower. Me, it was like, okay, I'm in town, do all my chores and then get back out really quickly. So I think that's the biggest difference is just where your moments of peace are. And when you're not moving, it's stressful.
I feel that for sure. Lila, how about you?
I hiked 21. I hiked northbound, and this effort was southbound. So there's just like the weather differences and the challenge differences, right? Like, you know, water, rain, drought. But also, I would say the amount of people that you run into. I'd say like by Southern Virginia, I had kind of stopped running into other thru hikers. I ran into a handful after that, but a lot of not very many pure southbounders. So it was a very sort of like solitary experience, except for the interactions with day hikers and at hostels if I stopped through. So it wasn't the huge social, you know, bonanza that a true northbound hike might be. There is still tons of connection to be made along the way. And also I'd say you get to see a lot of wildlife and everything too, because if there's not hikers in front of you and behind you scaring things away, then I think I got to see a lot of cute critters out there.
Did you also see like an obscene amount of yellow orb weaver spiders?
So many.
Because that's what I remember about when the people tailed off in Southern Virginia.
And I mean, and you know, the hours in the dark.
Just constant orb weavers to the face.
Oh my God. That's like my worst nightmare too. So I feel like I'm very well acquainted with spiders at this point. And like, I think most of y'all were also cowboy camping out there too. So just having the daddy long legs just crawling over you every morning. I am one with the spiders at this point.
Yeah. I definitely had a phobia of spiders prior to my AT. FKT. And I wouldn't say I love spiders, but it definitely kind of inoculates you after dealing with that. Sarah, how about you? What were the differences you noted?
My third hike in 21 was so enjoyable. I loved every minute of it. And this experience was just, you know, it was the opposite. I struggled to find joy. And for me, it was very much a spiritual journey about putting my faith outside of myself and believing in that God could actually help me get there. And so that actually took the ability for me to quit on myself out of the equation. And so, I struggled to find beauty and I struggled to stay in the moment. And so when I did actually experience that, I did start to see some glimpses of beauty further along in my journey. I really appreciated those moments.
Jeff kind of touched on this about like the logistics and the planning, because obviously doing something self-supported, you know, you kind of have to have a pretty good solid plan going into what you're doing. And for the most part, you know, you kind of have to stick with it. So I don't know, Jeff, do you want to speak a little bit more about, you know, what kind of logistics went into, you know, your record? And I mean, you took, I think, 4 hours off of Joe's time. So, I mean, you had to have had a pretty detailed plan and stick to it to do that. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think self-support is really unique because versus supported, which you have a crew that can help and kind of problem solve along the way. Self-supported, you have to do probably 90%+ of your problem solving, or at least considering what's going to happen and resupplies ahead of time. So it involved a lot of spreadsheets and calling resupply spots and knowing the hours everything's open and yeah, having that all dialed into a T. And then the tricky part too is you have to be really good at knowing how long it's going to take to get between the spots you're resupplying, so you have enough food and stuff. And I think it's the most fun puzzle of a self-supported adventure, is that all these little variables, they can kind of snowball if you're off a little bit. So you just have to like really know yourself, or kind of know how you're feeling in the moment, and make adjustments along the way too. So basically I had maybe 18 different boxes that I mailed myself, and some included shoes and salt pills and caffeine pills and all kinds of stuff. And then even within the adventure, because that's guessing how I'm going to feel over a month and a half, it would be like, okay, I got to this town, or I'm passing this gas station, I need to supplement a couple thousand calories and buy more stuff because I'm moving slower, or I just really need more caffeine or something like that. Is it's just continually being in tune with your body. And it's like maybe once every 3 or 4 days, you have the chance to prepare yourself for the upcoming section. So it's like your mind can never take time off when you're kind of in those critical moments. And I think it's really fun, but it also is something that's maybe discounted by some ultra runners and stuff going for the supported style of, yeah, you have to be so on your game, or one bad section can, these records are also competitive, one wrong section can really just blow up your whole attempt.
Yeah, absolutely. Lila, do you have anything you'd like to add about maybe what went into the logistics angle for your hike?
I mean, this is the first time that I've done like one of these super long efforts for an FKT. So it was a learning experience, you know, on the ground for me. And, you know, I think I would have done some things different now. But my general thought was to try to at least have a box every 300 miles to try to switch out. Like, and also, Jeff, I think you did the same thing. Like, and we all tried to avoid post offices for sure. That's like the really narrow hours made it really hard. I think that I would have put more calories into my resupply. Like, there was really no accounting for the amount of food that I was capable of eating. I was generally happy with how I timed out some of my resupplies. The hardest one I had, Jeff, I watched some of your videos when I could, and the Daleville section, the section into Daleville, from the Chenies to Daleville, was an absolute killer. I ended up doing 200 miles from, I did it from Big Meadows Wayside. I resupplied there and went into Daleville, and I had to like stop and get, there was a hot dog stand along the side of the way. Did y'all see that? There's a hot dog stand.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a hot dog stand that sold popcorn and hot dogs. So I had to like load up on hot dogs and kettle corn and stuff. You know what I'm talking about? Kings or something?
I stopped there.
Yeah, I saw that.
They were pretty good, but you know, it's not seven hot dogs is too many hot dogs. You know, it was just all about finding those opportunistic calories. And I really valued the carrying out, like seeing if I did get a chance to walk through a town, making sure that I like overloaded on calories in town, and also at least packed out one sandwich or two or some of those burritos or something, like all those opportunistic bonus calories. I found I did my best hiking if I had something that I would consider like real food. My body really, really responded to that. And that was like high octane fuel for me. I also drank a lot of maple syrup on this effort, which I truly stand by. I feel like I was mixing together maple syrup and like electrolyte salts that I had into a pouch. And just like before a big climb or something, I would like hit that right off my vest. And I don't know. I mean, I've been using it up in New Hampshire, but it definitely worked on the AT too. So I think I'm going to keep that going.
That was a great segue into my next question, which was food. Sarah, do you have anything you'd like to add to logistics? Or if not, do you want to just tell us a little bit about your food experiences on the trail?
There's a lot I would do differently. I'm very much a beginner at this, and this was my first long, like, self-supported attempt, and I should have done some more planning, and I have a much better idea of what I would do differently now. But I did send myself quite a bit of food, probably too much food. And I was a little heavy because of that. But I was, like Lila, I was very opportunistic about food, and I'm a good eater. So I ate quite a bit. But the issue for me was that I got norovirus early on in my hike, and I lost quite a bit of weight. And so I was playing catch up the whole way. Yeah, I definitely did send some boxes to a couple post offices, and I regret that decision, particularly in Montebello. I had quite a long layover there because the postmaster decided to show up late. And anyway, yeah, definitely would do some things different.
Yeah. Jeff, did you have anything you wanted to add about food since we kind of like added that in the middle of that round?
Yeah, I kind of have experimented over the years with food. So I made some of my own stuff, like some bars and things that were like 1,000 calories and 1,000 calorie drink mix and stuff. But food is such an interesting thing. I think that when you go on a day hike or a weekend backpacking trip, it's like really exciting and you can eat good food and it's like really enjoyable. Food kind of turned to this thing where it was like a necessity. I didn't like necessarily crave anything at the end, and it was almost a chore to keep eating enough food where even at the end, it was like, what do you want at the end? It was like, I don't know. I don't really care. Like I'm just kind of fooded out for the last 45 days. And yeah, it was very strategic, and food is just like a huge piece of the puzzle. But yeah, it's not like this permission to eat whatever you want, because it's more just like, just eat everything and maybe you like it and maybe you don't.
That's actually how I felt towards the end of my calendar year Triple Crown. I was just tired of eating. Like it just was like a job, and I was just so sick of food and there was nothing to look forward to about it.
Yeah, it can be very monotonous, and it's just like densely packed. The calories are the foods that are like the best for weight. You just get tired of the quickest, like nuts and stuff. It's just like, how many packets of nuts can I eat? And by the end, it's just sick of them. And yeah, I'm like grabbing the rollers and things from 7-Eleven and taking like 5 of those at a time because they're just different.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I went through a phase where I was just packing out Jell-O pudding cups because they were just different. It was just a different food. So Sarah, you mentioned getting noro. So that kind of segues me into like one of my next questions was like, any injuries aside from noro, Sarah? I mean, noro seems like enough. Do you want to tell us the noro story?
Sure. Yeah. So it was in the Southern Virginia section, and there was just a huge group of a bubble of hikers, and you know, it just spreads. And I don't know where I got it, but I did get it, and it was awful. I did a 4.4 mile day. I was just collapsing every quarter mile and falling asleep and then waking back up. And I ended up stealth camping at Clendenin and Pocahontas Road, just outside of Perrysburg. And I just waited it out, basically sweat it all out. And, you know, I kept drinking water, but it was the sickest I've ever been.
And that's terrible.
Yeah. I did want to quit, but I had service there and I called my husband, and he had been instructed to not let me quit. And he reminded me of my why. And so I decided to just fall asleep. And the next morning I woke up and I didn't feel terrible. So I made the decision then. It actually lit a fire in me to keep going. I was like, I'm not going to quit on myself. This is not going to stop me. Another funny thing is actually John Kelly and his crew ended up camping there that night. I heard them come in. And so I'm like, stealthed in the bushes. I never revealed myself, but that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
Let's see, any other injuries? I did one morning, I woke up after I'd packed up and I just took my first step and immediately fell flat on my face, and I kind of injured my hip flexor. But other than that, I was pretty lucky. I did bang up my knees once in New York, and I thought I'd shattered my kneecap, but I didn't. I just popped some.
Well, yeah, shattering a kneecap would be a pretty hard thing to keep hiking with.
sometimes it feels really bad, but it's not as bad as it feels in that moment.
Right. Yeah. Especially I feel like knees, they always hurt way worse than they're overly dramatic. Lila, how about you? Did you have any injuries or illnesses along the way?
The first couple of weeks, basically through Vermont, where I was kind of like dealing with these sort of like trading light injuries between leg to leg, right? So like my right meniscus was hurting on my right knee for a while. And so I overcompensated with my left, and then I end up straining my quad on my left leg. And, you know, you sort of just sort of do your best because there's no stopping. Yeah, you know, I mean, as y'all know, there's no stopping to let things heal or recover. I kind of use this refrain that works for me. I'm like prone to black and white and catastrophic thinking sometimes. And it's easy for me. My brain wants to just jump to, oh no, everything is lost. Like this is, you know, I don't even know why I should keep going. Right. But I would just try to remind myself, like, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how you're going to feel tomorrow. You don't know if you have one good night's sleep or one, you know, like good meal, or, you know, maybe if you rest for 10 minutes, things will change. And it's hard to trust that at first, but I found that throughout the effort, eventually these, you know, pains that I was having would eventually go away. It might take a week or it might take a week and a half, but eventually, you know, they might feel better. And I would love to know what y'all think about this, but I feel like my body figured out what we were doing, you know? It was like, okay, all of our energy, all of our resources, all of our focus goes on keeping these legs moving and keeping this brain conscious for as long as we need it to be. And so like maybe other smaller things, like smaller injuries wouldn't heal, but it knew, like my body seemed to focus on the things that I needed to the most in those moments. So would I feel great? You know, like I had a pretty nasty quad issue at one point where I was near the Mass-Vermont border and was using my trekking poles as crutches, basically sort of like hobbling into the border there. Yeah, I just decided I was gonna, you know, basically like rest up in Williamstown. I got a hotel. I used the ice and the ice machine. I raised my leg for one night, and I decided if it doesn't feel better tomorrow, then we can talk about doing, you know, like about making choices about this hike. But, you know, I did wake up the next day and it was usable. Was it better? Was it totally better? No, but I was able to continue on. And that's really all you have to be able to do is you have to not quit. That's the only way you cannot achieve your goal is for sure, is if you quit. So I just decided I would just not quit and see what happened.
I feel like I've noticed my body on these efforts too. It like goes into this hyper healing mode where like an injury that should take a week to heal will heal in like 2 days. You know, it just like suddenly just tunes into the fact that, oh, like this is important. We have to like do everything we can to heal this up as rapidly as possible.
It's a little superpower, a little short-term superpower.
Yeah, definitely. Jeff, how about you? Did you have any injuries?
I had a lot of scares, but nothing that lasted more than a day or two. I had a lot of falls. Like it rained in Vermont and Massachusetts, and there's some rocky sections, and I had a couple slips off some rocks and landed poorly, but I mean, it worked out. Like, I guess it just went away. Some bruises, rolled ankles. I could feel my Achilles being taxed, but it never developed into anything bad. And I've had some Achilles issues, just ultra running and stuff over the years. So that was a fear, but kind of my style is while I'm out there, if I'm interacting or texting or talking with anyone, it's like injury talk is off limits. And even talk like in my head and to myself, I can't talk about it. So it's just like, if there's a little twinge, it's like I can acknowledge it or tape it up or do whatever, but I'm not going to manifest or put more energy into letting at least the thought portion of it develop in my head. So it has to like truly be a real injury to develop. And so by using that style, everything kind of went away within a day or two. And yeah, I had the same knee thing too, where I had a pretty bad fall right on my kneecap, and it was like, it hurt so bad. I had like tears in my eyes, but it's like, okay, well, I can still walk now. Let's keep going. And it hurt in the morning, but not to a debilitating level. And I don't know if that's my style. So I don't know if it means that I gloss over injuries too, but it, at least nothing was bad enough to do more than just slow me down for a few hours at a time.
I'd love to talk about sleep, because I feel like sleep is such a personalized thing, and it's, you know, an aspect of these longer FKTs, because I feel like over the years, you know, people have gotten faster, but they've also slept less and less and less to bring these times down. So I'd just love to know a little bit about like your sleep strategy, how it played out, any issues with sleep deprivation, just that whole aspect of your hike. Lila, you want to start?
I found that I slept a bit more in the beginning states with my body adjusting just to the effort in general, and also the, you know, the intense elevation gain. I found it harder to like maintain consciousness late into the night. So I probably got a little bit more sleep those days. But then, yeah, once I started adjusting, I found I could get away with like 3.5 would be like, I felt like I could operate like, you know, pretty well. I could get my miles in safely. If I did 2.5, I was sort of borrowing from tomorrow's energy, or, you know, I was operating at a deficit at that point. But, you know, if I got between 4 and 5 hours in a night, like consistent, I would be really, really happy with that. Like, I think 4.5 is a really nice, like, sweet spot for me, where I was able to make my miles and feel recovered enough to continue on. But yeah, I mean, I would just throw down wherever I could. It was really nice if you could get to a shelter, but sometimes those shelters are a little off trail. A lot of times I just threw down my sheet of Polycro wherever I was flat, and threw my quilt out and never had any trouble falling asleep.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, how about you?
I actually got probably more sleep than I needed. And the record that I was on was not as competitive as the one that Lila and Jeff were going after. So, and after Nora, honestly, I was in a deficit. So I decided to hit a certain amount of miles per day and knew that I could hang on to that. And I do want to explore more sleep deprivation in the future and see where my limit is. But I did not, unfortunately, find that limit on this attempt.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I went to a lot of dark places near the end, but I tried to maintain 6 hours of sleep through, I guess, New Hampshire in general, just because the terrain is more taxing. It's by far the hardest section of the trail, and just trying to give my body a little bit more time to recover. And then from there, it just sort of whittled down 5 hours to 4 hours to, by the end, it was like 1 to 2 hours a night, because I'm just getting really pushing it, trying to get the record, and just things were hurting. And so I had a lot of hallucinations, and it's something I've been through a lot before, so I welcomed him back. But it's just, it's always really scary when you know you're going to cut sleep so much that you're going to be hurting. And and like going into every night, it was a little bit overwhelming to know that it was going to be another hard night. But then once you're in it, it's not such a big deal, I find. It's almost like I have probably too much familiarity to be healthy with it, that I just knew what was going to happen, and I knew some of the characters and things I'm going to see out there, and knew how to push through. But yeah, it was like almost the pre worry of what sleep deprivation does, and then got through it and did fairly fine. But yeah, the last, now it's been 4 days, have been pretty awful. Like, my body just cannot stay awake for very long at a time.
Right. Hopefully you make it through this podcast.
Yeah, I should be able to.
I definitely like resonate with that, like, familiarity of it. Like, I don't even really dread it anymore. And it's only when I'm talking to somebody who's just like sort of outside that frame of reference, and I'm just like casually referencing auditory hallucinations and, you know, things like that, and they're just like, wait, what? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's normal. It happens. You know, you just get to that. Yeah.
Like, I really wanted to know, Jeff, what were some of your visual hallucinations? I've been wondering.
Yeah, I see witches a lot. So like the trees turn to witches, and the bears, the stumps turn to bears. Those are like the two stump earliest bears. Ones, which I know.
Classic stump bears.
Those are my signal that I'm going to be hallucinating quite a bit of those two things. And so And then I have this like safari guy that keeps popping in to things, which he's, when I was like 6 years old, my parents put on the movie Jumanji and I had nightmares about that safari guy. And here we are 30 years later and we'll still have that safari guy hop into adventures when I'm sleep deprived. So I think, yeah, it's crazy that something so long ago can still permeate my vision when I'm
living rent free in your subconscious all these years. Yeah. I feel like there should be just like a podcast episode that's just literally every guest comes on and just shares their like best hallucination story, because man, people see some crazy things.
Yeah, they're also unique too.
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody has some sort of unique twist on it. It's very interesting how the mind operates. Speaking of the mind, like I kind of, and maybe I'm not going to phrase this question super well, but you know, like, can you talk a little bit about the mental side of doing this? Like, obviously you're like, okay, this bad thing happened. I thought about quitting, you know, and then, you know, I didn't quit or, you know, whatever. But I feel like it goes deeper than that when you really have to dig into like this really deep mental reserve to do something like this. So just maybe you just talk even just a little bit about the mental side of setting an FKT like this. Violet, you want to start?
I mean, you know, it's cliche, but it does come back to the why. I don't know that I am literally, I feel like you have the choice, right? The choice is yes or no, right? It's do I continue? Do I not continue? Maybe early on, I felt like I was asking myself that a lot, like in a more conscious way where I was like, wow, this is really, really painful. But at a certain point, just sort of like a muscle or just sort of like a habit, you build up you build up your choice. Your choice is yes. Your choice is always yes until it's not even a choice anymore. And after a while, you know, like a few states in or whatever, I didn't have to think about it anymore. I was committed to doing it and it was going to be whatever it was going to be. And I was going to get it or I wasn't going to get it. But that's where I was. And I lived there. I lived in that moment. I lived on that little track of dirt and rocks and following those blazes. And that's just what and who I was until I got to Springer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sarah?
Yeah. For me, I was tired of quitting on myself. And that was so well said, Lila. It's like a reflex. And once you keep choosing yes, it gets easier and easier to choose yes. And I think that our minds just keep expanding the farther we go to the limit or our perceived limit. I think we start to get a new limit. And that's what I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the mental side is really interesting because you start off and you're really excited. And I think especially getting to go south, when it's the most immersive terrain, the hardest, is like really fun. And then you get in this chunk in the middle and it just is like, I've been doing this so long and I have so far to go that you almost have to find the space of like, that everyone looks for on a through hike, whether it's an FKT or not, of like, how present can I be? Because it's like, I'm either in this resupply or in this day or in this hour. And that's where your mind has to go. And it can take couple weeks to get there, and you know, you almost have like a honeymoon period. But once you get there, that's where it's like that over and over again of different challenges can come your way, but now you have this problem solving resilience of now I'm just figuring out the way to move on, not if I'm going to move on. But I think that it can't be overstated how hard that shift into truly being present when there's just when there's thousands of miles to go, it's really hard to let yourself just let that go and not think about that, because be like, I'm so tired, I'm in pain, these things hurt, but I've got to do this for like 30 more days. That can be an overwhelming thought. So having that mental ability to just sink into how am I going to do the best today, not worry about next week, and just doing that over and over again until eventually you get there. And then on the flip side, I always think when you get under like 100 miles, your brain just automatically grasps onto, I know kind of how far this is, and it's still a long way to go. And it's like the hardest part is the end where it's like, I've still got to put in a couple good days here. yet I feel like I'm almost there. And that's where it's usually the biggest mental battle for myself of like going, you're not almost there, but for some reason your mind is trying to tell you that you are, and it can be your mind and your body and in that last little chunk too.
Yeah, I always find the almost end is the absolute hardest part.
I keep having nightmares that I have 5 miles left. This is like, it's not like 1 hour. It's a decent amount of time to keep moving still.
Yeah, 5 miles doesn't sound that far, but it does take a while. I know from your post, Jeff, you had a lot of these, but I'm kind of curious, like, if you guys could talk about, like, mishaps, like, things that went wrong, and how you handled it, and, like, the resiliency aspect of that, because inevitably something goes wrong on an FKT of this length, and just kind of, yeah, like, how you dealt with it. Sarah, you want to go first?
I had a trekking pole that would not collapse, and then I had one that was just completely useless, or I'm sorry, I had one that was stuck, and then I had one that would not come out fully. So yeah, that was really frustrating, and it happened in the White Mountains, so I actually had to put that trekking pole under my hip belt, and it's just like a big, long sword. And it's just hitting all the rocks. It's so cumbersome. And on top of that, I'd sent myself too much food. So I did a lot of crying in the whites. Yeah, so that went wrong. And I think at the very end, my poor pack finally, it broke on the side. And so I had to, yeah, just kind of tie it together.
And it held? Like...
It was literally like 2 days before I summited.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah. I was like just picturing you just like hiking, like holding it together.
I had some cordage that I actually was able to use.
Okay. Lila, how about you?
I had a moment early on where I was looking at far out on my phone with my phone out, and as I was crossing a river in Maine, and of course, you know, I fell over and fully fell into the water and got my phone soaked and got that sort of like dreaded water droplet that tells you you can't charge your phone, which is like horrifying in the best of circumstances. But when it's already, I mean, you all know, like the battery charging and the keeping your batteries charged and the whole electronics thing is like, was probably one of my primary like stressors out there. So yeah, that I'm like, okay, like, how do I get access to a,
right,
you know, a wireless charger, or how do I dry it out when it's like everything is wet and there's no, you know, it's very, very difficult to dry out your phone as you're hiking. When you get to hold it up and try and point it at the sun or something, like, that became a consistent issue where there was like water damage in my phone. So I was constantly sort of like monitoring like the phone or monitoring my battery packs and everything. I had to get a couple different chargers. I feel like my charger game at this point and my cord game is like impeccable at this point. But yeah, that was a learning curve to see like, how do you get the most battery power into your electronics without ruining your whole day, right? Like, especially how do you charge things if possible, if you can charge things when it's dark out rather than using daytime hours to do it. So that was one. And then I think just another one is, hunger. You know, like I did go with that more like opportunistic method of resupply, where I didn't have all of my food lined up for me in advance. I do things like rely on resupplying at hostels that offer resupply on far out. But a lot of times being a sobo, that's like kind of their off season for the hostels. So they might not actually carry food, or they might just have, you know, a couple Slim Jims and a few packs of like Ruffles left over. And that's what your resupply is. That was a resupply for me, was Slim Jims and chips and Pop-Tarts, because I didn't call the hostel in advance to make sure that they had like appropriate food, even though, you know, they had to advertise the resupply, which I'm sure they have a wonderful one during Nobo season. So I guess I just did, all I did was eat it. I just ate the junk and powered through like we all do. So I don't know if there's a cool answer to it. Just, you know, try to make it through. Try to keep a good attitude about it.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, I think you're just going to have to pick like one or two, because I, seeing your updates, I feel like there was a lot of things that went wrong. I really want to hear about the shoes. So please tell that one.
So I packed all my resupply boxes, all like 18 or 19 of them. And, you know, I had maybe four or five different pairs of shoes I put in them too. And I'm just, they're all laid out on the floor and putting stuff in. And at some point I put two left shoes into a box, and that meant another box got two right shoes. And luckily it was my first, well, I don't know, luckily it was right after the white. So my first resupply, or my first shoe box was two left shoes, and I opened it up and it was like sweet new shoes. And I looked closer about to put them on. And it's like, these are two left shoes. This is really bad, because my shoes are so destroyed from all the rocks and the whites, and there were holes in them. So it was just like, well, I guess I have to keep wearing the shoes I have. And then it's like, look at far out and where can I buy shoes? And so I decided I had to make it to Killington, which was a couple hundred more miles. So I just kept going in these old shoes, and within 50 miles I get to Hanover and there's like holes so big my toes are sticking out of the shoes. So I bought duct tape and just wrapped the shoes in duct tape to get 100 more miles out of them, and get to Killington and buy a pair of shoes to get by for a couple hundred more miles. And then I reordered shoes, like four more pairs, to all the places I'd sent shoes to, because it was like, I don't know which box has two right shoes. And so like, I'm probably never going to get to attempt this again. I don't want this to be the thing that throws it off. So it's like, bite the bullet and just go for it. And so ordered those. And yeah, if someone, so it turned out my two left shoes were about 1200 miles later. So if somebody wants to thru-hike the trail and take those two left shoes all the way north, they can get two brand new right shoes 1200 miles later. Two brand new pairs of size 11 and a half shoes. And so that was the biggest thing. That was self-induced. And then a mouse got in one of my boxes, apparently. In the Shenandoahs. I don't really know, because they just threw the whole box away. Like, it was so sad, because it had like socks, and it had a battery bank in there. So it had like things that I would have taken even if all the food was ruined. I could have figured that out. But so then I had like 200 miles with just trying to use like a headlamp on low power mode and not use my phone and try to conserve my tracker. Yeah, it's just like little things mean so much out there. And the battery power, especially for verifying these things, is just like so anxiety inducing too. Yeah. And then, you know, broken poles and all kinds of stuff like that. But
didn't you also then lose all of your electronics at a certain point too?
Yep. They were sitting right next to where I was sleeping, and I packed up at 3 a.m. and I just left the bag of all my cords and my battery bank sitting right there.
Oh my God.
And it was maybe 180, 200 miles from the end. So just pieced it together. But yeah, I mean, that's the sleep deprivation thing. You just, it becomes easier and easier to make mistakes. And, you know, if you make one, it's also easier and easier for your mind to spiral. So it's sort of like, all right, I can't go back. I can't turn around and go back 30 miles, because that's when I realized it. So it's like, let's look at forward looking solutions. Let's keep going and just figure this out on the fly.
And I mean, all of you are great examples of accepting the things that happen out there and moving forward through them. Like, you all faced huge challenges on your hikes, and, you know, ultimately were successful. So yeah, super impressive. And I'm really grateful you guys all made time to come on the show and share about your hikes. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, you guys are awesome.
I think that all three of you had like basically my worst nightmare things happen to you. Like, I'm always paranoid of losing my electronics. I'm always paranoid of getting like Noro. Like, you know, just like, yeah.
Let's be honest. If all those things happen to me, I must be pretty prepared in dealing with them, because it's not just a random thing. I think it's just part of how I am.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, you guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again, you guys, for coming on the show. You can read about these FKTs on the website, fastisknowntime.com.